M24. The Two Translations. Number 1A.
Now this morning we came as far as what I think is an introduction into the chapter. And as this chapter has so much to do with the sense of translation, I would like first to take those two translations as we have them in the textbook on page 115 and 116, so that when we have done that, we really can start with the subjects of the chapter. So let us perhaps open on page 115 and 116, though for the moment I want to give an introduction to that, to those two translations. By the way, what I'm going to say on those two translations can be found in a much larger and much better way in John Morgan's book on the two translations. I shouldn't talk on these two translations, because what is in that book is much better than what I can say here, and I restrict myself only to the main points which somehow I feel is needed in order to not lose the thread of my presentation of the chapter. When we talk about the two translations, we really mean the translation, the scientific translation of Immortal Mind and the translation of Mortal Mind. Now, these two translations form one translation. And they are not something which are completely new, but something which one finds already indicated in the Bible, especially in John's Gospel. These two translations show first the translation of God to man, and second the translation back of matter into mind. So the first translation is always from God, from the principle to the idea, to man. The second translation takes the wrong concept of the universe and translates it back into God. So that again, in another sense, the infinite circle is closing and all thoughts start from God and return to God. This is shown in John's Gospel in various ways, and because those few verses are so clear and impressive, I want to read them. For instance, in John 3:13, it is said, "And no man has ascended up to heaven, but he that came down from heaven, even the Son of Man which is in heaven." So here John gives those two translations, though not in a right order syntactically. Can you say syntactically? In syntax. Because he starts with, in the syntax, he starts with the second translation, but naturally the spiritual order of that verse is that he shows that first of all there is man in heaven, then that no man can come down from heaven, I'm not very good in putting sentences upside down again, but that it says that Son of Man is that comes down from heaven, that only that man can ascend up to heaven, really. So In its logic, Jesus says, first we must see that man is in heaven, and that all that can come down to us is from heaven. You see, you get the sense fromness, from heaven. And that only that man can ascend up to heaven, which first had come down from heaven. So there is no translation back into heaven, except there is first a translation from heaven. That's very important to know in practice, in everyday life, that we can never start by translating matter back into spirit, but that the translation of matter back into spirit is something that can only be done if first we have the first translation and start out from principle and see that principle translates itself always to man and to the universe as its idea. So that the first translation is actually the first and can never put second or vice versa. Or in John 6:62, we read, "What if we shall see the Son of Man ascend up where he was before?" See, he always gives a sense that nothing can go back to God but that which has already been in God. Or John 8:14, Jesus answered and said unto them, "Though I bear record of myself, yet my record is true." See, if he would leave it at this point, we would say, well, that's just the opposite of what we have been learning all the way and up to now. Namely, that if we testify of ourselves, the testimony is not true, because the personal ego cannot reveal anything. But he can say that because he gives an answer. He says, "For I know whence I came and whither I go." So you have the two translations again, from where I came, from God, and whither I go to the Father. You have the two translations. And in that moment, naturally, we can really say that the testimony of us is true, because then our personal I has been resolved into the big divine I. That I, where we see I come forth from the Father and return to the Father, and then our testimony is true. So we can testify truly out of ourselves then, when we have been seeing that we are nothing else but the operation of God, the operation of mind, the operation of spirit, and so on. So in 13:3, it is said, "Jesus knew that the Father had given him all things into his hands, and that he was come from God and went to God." Can you see how in very few words, very pertinent, pregnant words, he states over and over that sense of scientific translation, coming from God and returning to God, but that the order is always the same. He doesn't say, "Only when I go to the Father, then the Father can come to me." But he says, "No, the Father comes to me, and therefore I can go to the Father." Or in 16:28, "I came forth from the Father, and I'm come into the world." See, the translation of God to mortals. Again, I leave the world, I leave the first degree, and go to the Father, go back to the Father. Again, the first and second translation, really showing that he came into the world just as a leaven, just as yeast, changing all the elements of human consciousness until nothing is left except the divine consciousness. He came into the world, and again, I leave the world and go to the Father. This is important to know in our everyday life, because in general we are mostly only interested how the Father comes, how we come into the world, how we can translate the divine principle into everyday language and practice. Whereas this is only the beginning of our endeavor and of the mission of Christian Science. You know, she said the mission of Christian Science had all the elements of the Word as the Word as Christ, and then Word as Christianity, Word as Science returning thought intelligently to God. So that the ultimate aim is to find our thought back again in God. Now these are a few references from the Bible. In the writings of Mrs. Eddy, we find various pertinent statements on translation, the translation from God to mortals. For instance, she says, a spiritual sense is a conscious, constant capacity to understand God. Its ideas are expressed only in new tongues, and these are interpreted by the translation of the spiritual original into the language which human thought can comprehend. So here we have another sense of translation, namely that translation where it is shown that the language of spirit can be translated in that language which mortals can understand. So we feel that this Christ has a comforting mission, is very humane in its mission, because it doesn't say, I am the divine principle, nobody can understand what I am. But it has the faculty of translating itself into those symbolism, into those works, into that language, into those illustrations, whatever it is, into those expressions which are adapted to every level of thought, so that through those illustrations one can touch the meaning of the divine principle. Then naturally we have that very well-known passage in Miscellaneous Writings, page 22, which I think one really should know by heart, but I don't, so I have to read it. But it's so important that it says, Christian Science translates mind, God, to mortals. That's the first translation. What is this translation? Here, she gives that translation in a way as she has given it on page 107, which we have taken this morning, namely through the four sides of the Christ. It says, it is the infinite calculus. It is a whole calculus. You see now, in science, it's explained this translation as a calculus. No more just as a process, as a simple process, defining the line, plane, space, and fourth dimension of spirit. Now, with the line, plane, and space is not meant a dimension of matter. The line is a dimension of spirit. The plane is a dimension of spirit. Space is a dimension of spirit. Very often this sentence is read as if only the fourth would be a dimension of spirit. All four are dimensions of spirit, because the language of Christ is the new tongue that only speaks in spiritual terms. But they are dimensions of understanding, dimensions of thought. And they are dimensions which, she afterwards says, it absolutely refutes, and now gives the four counterfeit dimensions. Namely, it absolutely refutes the amalgamation of individuality. Then, the transmigration of individuality. It refutes then the absorption of individuality. And it refutes, fourthly, the annihilation of individuality. It shows that in the translation of God to man, man doesn't lose his individuality, but just the other way around, that man really finds his individuality. That through the translation of God coming to man, of Emmanuel, God with us, doesn't bring with it an amalgamation of individuality, so that there is just one amorphous, one unit individuality. It isn't a transmigration of individuality. We should see that whenever we have the Christ translation, that never individual thought or individual power, individual healing power, individual influence is transmitted from one to the other, from practitioner to patient or anything like that. You know, sometimes as you hear somebody saying, well, go to this and this practitioner, he has a very strong mentality, or he has a very great healing power, as if he could transmit a strong mentality, a strong healing power from him to the patient. The Christ shows that there is only one transmission, and that is a translation, and not really a transmission from one place to the other, from the place where God is to the place where man is, but that this transmission is resolved really into translation. But there is no absorption of individuality, but that there is therefore reflection of individuality. If we want to find true individuality, and each one wants to find true individuality, and the Western world is very emphatic on defending one's individuality and does everything and rejects anything that would take away his individuality, that would amalgamate individuality with God or absorb individuality into the one God. And that's right, but let's see how we find our true individuality. I don't think we find it through addition, through our only approach to God. But it would be still limited to see what is our individual mission, because we would go out from our concept of what we want to be individually. What is our individual strength? What is our individual characteristic? What is our, what you call it, individual 40 strengths, your speciality also. That would be limiting our individuality. But if we let the divine mind come to us and do with us what mind has in store for us, what mind translates to us, what mind wants to do with us, to let us be used by the divine mind, then we respond to an individuality which is given in the divine mind, which is perceived in the divine mind and not in our mind. And this naturally gives an infinite reflection of individuality. When I feel, when we talk about individuality, let's be clear that we have not one individuality, that each man has not his one individuality. If God is infinite individuality, then man, as the reflection of infinite individuality, certainly has infinite individuality, and not his specified, specific, characteristic, personal, unique individuality, which he keeps forever. He has the infinite individuality. And I like to see that one is used more and more to express even those individual characters which seem, from a human standpoint, foreign to oneself. And I feel that the Christian Scientist sometimes should make use of this wonderful sense that God as infinite one and the one infinite individuality can translate himself to us as infinite individuality. Then we would not always say to every occasion that arises, well, that's not my cup of tea, well, that's not in my line, well, I am not good for that, well, that's not my that's not according to my ability, and so on. We should feel that we can do anything if God wants us to do it. We should reject that sense to be absorbed only in one specific individuality. That one specific individuality is now to do this and this and all to do this all one's life. I think if one would break that sense, that of a false sense of individuality, and see that we can reflect any individuality. At one time we reflect the individuality of motherhood, the next very 5 minutes the individuality of fatherhood, the next 5 minutes the individuality of teacher, the next 5 minutes the individuality of a friend, the next 5 minutes the individuality of a healer, the next 5 minutes the individuality of sonship, or of anything. Why are we going on with such a big subject, with such an enormous source from which we can draw and go on and be limited in our individuality? Say, well, that's not in my line. Why not? If God calls us, it is in our line. Then we have to see that we are not going to absorb individuality, but let God translate himself to the point where we are and accept and conceive of that individuality. It's infinite. It shows, she goes on, the impossibility of transmitting human ills or evil. See, that would be a false translation, transmitting of evil, from one individual to another, that all true thoughts revolve in God's orbit. They come from God and return to God. --, then she has to say something. If she makes a --, then she thinks of something, says, but I have to tell you also something more about it. And untruths belong not to his creation. Therefore, these are null and void. You see, she says, that's the handling of evil. That's the handling, that's the method, how you can handle evil, these untruths, that they are null and void. When we have seen that all goes on within the orbit of God, that all comes from God, stays with God, reflects God, and comes back to God, then in that infinite circle, that in that withinness, then we have resolved the possibility of untruths. Because we have filled our thought with all the four corners of the holy city, and have seen there is not one little breach where something else can come in. You say breach, something can slip in. Yes. And untruths belong not to his creation. Therefore, these are null and void. You see, we can handle evil when we handle it from the Christ point of view, not by beating against evil, by hammering on evil, by denying evil, but by seeing that there is only God and his ideas going on. And the clearer we see that, so that it makes a perfect round, the more we have excluded all the arguments that there is anything existing besides this infinite one. It has no peer nor competitor, for it dwelleth in him besides whom there is none other. There is none other. So the Christ translation shows us really, then through the first and second translation, how mortal mind disappears and man in God's image appears. Yes, this is the translation from God to mortals. She uses that term, translation, also in another way, and only once, but in a very important way, namely in a false sense of translation. She says in the textbook, the material senses and human conceptions would translate spiritual ideas into material beliefs. See, the attempt to translate spiritual ideas into material beliefs, she calls, that's what the material senses and the human conceptions would like to do. It isn't what God would like us to do. It isn't what the Christ would like us to do, to translate spiritual ideas into material beliefs. And yet, only too often we hear this, that some or the other would say, well, this is all right what you people are doing, and that's all right what you are studying, and what you are conscious, that you are filling your consciousness with the absolute sense of God, but these ideas should be translated into, and then comes some into your life, or into your business, or into your this, or into your that. And one doesn't quite know what they mean by it. They may mean the right thing, but mostly I think if one asks them further and say, what do you mean? One finds out that what they are longing for and think it is a divine idea is just a false sense of translation. Namely, to translate spiritual idea into material beliefs, into the human plane of thought. Now, that is not translation. Translation is that the spiritual ideas translate human beliefs out of themselves, and not that ideas are translated into material beliefs, into mortal existence, into human life, into. Because an idea always remains in God. It comes from God and returns to God and never goes into. The most an idea can do is that it comes to the flesh, but not into the flesh. And all that the idea will do when it comes to the flesh and to the human experience and to human life is to translate that human life by itself. And not only that, the argument so often is, well, you should translate this idea into your daily life. Who is the you? The translations which Mrs. Eddy gives is God translates, the Christ translates. Therefore, if there is any translation through which the divine reaches the human, let us be very, very clear that it is God who does it, that it is not we that do it. Because I come from the Father and return to the Father. And it is the Father that worketh in you. It's the Father that does the work in you. It's the Father, really, that is the that wants to do and fulfills what he wants to do. So, let's be clear in these translations that really we remain in the first translation as our starting point, that only the power of divine principle can do something to the human, that it changes the elements of the human. And then this translation is a translation of grace. It isn't a false translation where with the sweat of our agony we try to translate that which we have understood as ideas into our human lives. It would be a personal attempt, a limited attempt, much bigger, much bigger. You see, that would be metaphysics, ordinary metaphysics. But much bigger is science. Much bigger is science where we say, well, the most practical thing to deal with the human problems, whatever they are, is to put the whole human problem behind us and say, first, I have to find my unity with God. Through the first four chapters. When I find my unity with God, then I stay with that unity, and God is with me. Then God with me is the ever-presence, is the Emmanuel, that ever-presence which is the deliverer. Then the Emmanuel is the deliverer that will free us of the ills of the flesh. And it is the Emmanuel within us, the God within us, that will deal with that which has to be dealt with. And it is the graceful way. Therefore, she always says, but from where did I get this revelation? It was from the divine power and grace. It was something given unto her, the gift of grace. And it is the gift of grace that should work within us.